found this Theron Black box. I thought you might want to take a look at it.
She hands over a clear rectangle sheet of black glass with smooth edges.
Oh, wow. This is really cool.
Where did you get that? You shouldn't have that.
I found it on a Theron ship that crashed.
Maybe I could take it to a friend?
I would use the word friend lightly.
Misha walks over to a small filing cabinet that's next to his bed, and he takes a key from around his neck. He unlocks the cabinet, and he pulls out two black cases, which are both marked with Theron symbols.
As you place it down, it instantly lights up.
You know what this means, right?
This could be the chance we've been looking for.
That doesn't sound good.
Sons of the Fathers is a sci-fi horror podcast using the 7th edition Call of Cthulhu role-playing system. It is a Necropodicon original, and our first episode premieres on the 1st of March, 2020. We advise that the show isn't for children, but is great for those who revel in hapless protagonists facing ever-increasing bad odds. Sons of the Fathers, boundless space, endless horror.
Necropodicon. Hard to pronounce? Easy to listen.
Dan, I just think I need to leave, you know? I just think
but
this podcast
wait,
isn't any
what
good.
Do you mean? Where are you going? Why?
And I think I should just go and just do another podcast. And I just think it's all your fault. I think it's just all
I
you.
I mean, I guess I can see that, but I don't understand why. What's the sudden urge to leave and start
no
your
No one
podcast?
Likes movies, and no one likes
okay,
people
that's
who
fair.
Talk about film.
Yeah, I totally see that.
And no one likes the way you look at me when you oh. talk. And
oh. Yeah, that's fair.
I'm going to put my makeup on and you have to watch.
What the fuck is this movie?
Hey, everybody. Welcome
to
the Indie Film Review. My name is Jared. That's Dan over there. Hey, Dan. What's up?
Hi, Dan. Jared?
What the f- Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. We have a glitch in the Matrix, and
that's right. You know what's fun is that we get to listen to that later and see if it's funny or not.
Edit everything out.
Edit everything out. So today we watched Road to Nowhere.
Bridge to Nowhere?
I'm on a road to nowhere. Yeah, you're right. It's Bridge to Nowhere. My bad. Let's see. What year was this?
1986, I believe. It is a New Zealand film.
Oh.
An independent New Zealand picture from the 1980s.
A Kiwi original.
A Kiwi original.
Yeah, it's starring a bunch of people I don't know.
I don't even think it's worth getting to know them because it's, I mean, who?
Disrespectful.
No, just hear me out on that.
Okay.
It's the 1980s. I saw it on Amazon. I'm like, huh, this might be a good movie to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched it and I wanted you to watch it. And it, let's just say, didn't quite live up to my expectations. So I don't think anybody who was part of this film is going to be hurt by the fact that we don't know their names.
So you had already seen this movie?
No, I was browsing through Amazon and I was adding stuff to my queue. And I'm like, oh, we can do this.
Was it the cover that caught you? Because the villain is cool.
Oh, yeah. The villain is fucking awesome. What did catch me? I guess it was the cover because it looked kind of like a Stand By Me type film.
I thought it was a Western at first, and then I read the premise, and I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting.
Well, Amazon pitches it, and this is kind of important to bring up, but Amazon pitches it as a drama horror.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of reminded me of Picnic at Hanging Rock, because that's just a big drama with like a little tinge of horror thrown in it.
Yes.
And I don't, I wouldn't call this a horror movie, but it's definitely an intense drama with murder in it.
Murder. Well, okay, why don't you tell us what the hell this is in a 30-second
elevator pitch. Oh, God, if I can't even do that. So there's this group of kids from New Zealand, and they have to go, or they want to go on a trip to the Bridge to Nowhere. It's like this landmark that it's a bridge in the middle of nowhere, as you might believe. And basically, one of the kids is a stupid hormonal douchebag. And basically fucks everything up for everybody else because there's this...
hold on. Don't spoil anything.
Well, I'm just saying that there's this loner dude, this hermit. All right. And he does not like the fact that they are encroaching on his territory. And he tries to drive them out as the only way he knows how.
These damn kids and their boomboxes.
Ghetto blasters.
I believe that's how it's called in the film. And their sex and their free love.
Also, one of the kids doesn't even want to be there. So there's a brother and sister, and the parents of the brother and sister force the brother to go.
Yeah.
Yes.
And pretty intense shit happens.
Pretty intense.
So that was a good summation of kind of what the film is about. Let's start doing questions. We're gonna get into questions now. Okay, Dan, did the aspect ratio or the, like, how this was filmed in general, how did that affect you while watching?
I mean, old 80s movies, it really just depends on my mood if I'm going to turn off a 4:3 or whatever, but this time around it didn't really bother me. I think it fit pretty well. Okay, so the visual aspect of, or the visual of the aspect ratio didn't turn me off. Let's just leave it at that. Was the nudity too gratuitous for you, or was it just gratuitous enough?
I thought the nudity. I thought the nudity was good. It wasn't oldity, so that was fine. But the nudity, I thought, was acceptable. And part of the, like, I felt like it fit with the plot of what was going on.
Yeah.
Because the whole time you're thinking, oh, man, this is going to turn into, like a slasher film where, like, the kids are going off on a camping trip and they all go to have sex, and then they all get killed one by one by the murderer. That's not what this movie is.
No,
at all,
this film is basically a, I would just like a spiritual successor to like a Deliverance type film.
Yeah, it's a wood survival.
Yeah.
Type of thing, like with less, is less on survival and more
and
of
I
the cat and mouse game.
I like
the kids. And
I like
the
aspect that we don't necessarily know why the killer is trying to kill.
Yes.
Other than the fact he's pissed off at them for being there.
Yeah, you kind of find out, and there's some implied things. What I really like about this movie is the villain is not one-dimensional, or villains, or whatever. Everyone has their own motives for what's going on and what they're doing. And even, like, that crazy, insane kid Leon that we'll get into, like, he's awful, and he's bipolar and disturbing, but...
Extremely bipolar. Like, I'm glad that you brought that up, that I thought that, I'm like, dude, this kid is bipolar. And it made me, if anything, this is probably the reason why I don't like the film, is having to watch him.
Well, he is sad, because he knows he's messed up, but he, like, can't turn his awful brain off, and he, like, begs his friend to help him, and, like, you know, there's, like, certain scenes where you see him, like, crying out for help of, like, I need help, like, with my behavior, I can't stop it, and then he just does the crazy things he does. But, so, like, everyone's kind of sympathetic in a way. I'm more sympathetic, actually, towards the villains than I am to Leon as the crazy kid.
Yeah.
I'm sympathetic to the other characters, too, more as well. Because they kind of get roped into what Leon does. But they also do some real bad shit themselves.
Yeah, they
and
do.
And, I mean, it starts to ask you questions of, like, what would you do to survive? Like, what would you do to get out of this cat and mouse game with this, like, deranged lunatic who wants to keep you in these woods, you know, to fucking die, basically. Just, like, starve to death. It gets really intense. So, okay. This was kind of, you kind of already answered what I was going to say, but did you find any of the characters likable or dislikable or...
Well, I was super sympathetic or empathetic to Tanya, the Leon's girlfriend, because they have a tiff that we'll get into.
How about the brother?
I mean, the brother turns into the hero.
Weird, right? Because, like, I kind of fit for him. I was like, yeah, he should be the hero. This makes sense.
You know, the more I'm thinking about this movie, the more I'm starting to like it. Because there were, like, just... Leon is, we'll say this, Leon is a force to be reckoned with in the film, and it's not a good force. Yeah. You really have to sit through Leon's screen time. And he's like the head honcho of that group, so you constantly have to pay attention to him, which is not very fun.
He's like the main villain from The Warriors.
Yes.
But like, annoying.
But extremely annoying, yes.
Seriously. Okay, did you have any more questions for me? Or did you want to try to get to the meat and potatoes?
How did you feel about the titular Bridge to Nowhere?
I thought it was very interesting. I actually looked it up, and it's a real landmark. And so what was going on is they tried to populate this uninhabited area.
By building a bridge. Just
like forest. No, they had...
If you build it, they will come.
That's right. They had that bridge and they had a cold stone. And then they thought, okay, people are definitely going to start showing up, right? No, nobody did. Nobody showed up. I mean, I love cold stone, but it's just too far out there.
The perfect representation of gentrification is cold stone.
And Starbucks. But so the actual place is actually, it's like the number one tourist attraction in that area. And in, I don't know if it's like all of New Zealand, but like in that whole area, people love to go there. And it, in real life, it's like a short 45 minutes is not short. It's a 45-minute walk through a trails to get to that spot, and then like people go there and visit it. And I think it was like World War One. They had let veterans settle there.
Interesting.
You know, and like farmland and stuff. But the place was just so uninhabitable that they all just left one by one.
So maybe this guy is like a World War One veteran.
Yeah, he is like one of the last few people holding out.
Interesting.
Because I think in like modern time right now, there's maybe only like one or two families that still live in there.
Interesting.
Pretty cool, huh?
That is pretty cool. I didn't do research, but I'm glad you did.
That's right. Hey, a basic search on Wikipedia could get you a long way on this podcast. We look like fucking geniuses now. These guys know a lot. A lot about the movie. Okay. Dan.
Yes.
I think it is time for us to get into Bridge to Nowhere.
We're on a bridge to nowhere.
To nowhere. Come on and see. All right. I want to start this, Dan, by us going through each of the characters.
Okay.
We've touched on... our favorite Leon. Why don't we start with him?
Leon is very obviously bipolar. Like,
oh,
that
yeah.
is, if they don't talk about it, but that is definitely his character trait. Like, it's textbook bipolar disorder. It's fucking insane.
He has mood swings that are
insane.
If
manic
not intentional,
episodes.
Then it's bad acting.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like Nicolas Cage and Vampire's Kiss kind of energy, but with no direction. Like, Cage had a goal. He was becoming a vampire. This guy is a horn dog and a half, and his girlfriend doesn't want to sleep with him, and that's making him go crazy.
That's motivation. He's sexually frustrated, so he's going to
but the way
attempt
in which,
murder on everyone.
The way in which... he explores his frustration is fucking batshit crazy.
Yeah. I love when he... okay, so we're going to start spoiling this movie, by the way. If you'd like to see Bridge to Nowhere, it's on Amazon Prime, is where we found it.
It's a Kiwi drama horror.
Kiwi drama horror. And I actually like this movie. How did you feel about it, Dan? Were you kind of like on the fence about it?
I was on the fence about it until like we started talking about it, and I definitely do like it. I probably won't watch it again ever.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a interesting movie that I'm glad I took the time to watch and suggest.
This was a film that I enjoyed, but probably wouldn't like go out of my way to recommend to people. But like, if it came up in conversation, I'd be like, hey, Bridge to Nowhere, have you heard of it? And then, I don't know. It wouldn't be like a film I'd like go and proselytize. But I enjoyed my time watching it. I think that's safe to say. We basically covered Leon. There's some issues with this film I have, especially the intro where all the kids are saying goodbye to their parents.
Yes.
The cuts between this, the different scenes were so abrupt that like I didn't know what was going on at first. Because they were showing all these different characters. I'm like, what? Are we in the same house? Are these characters related? What's going on? And one of the very first scenes is Leon sneaking into his parents' room.
To steal a gun.
Yeah, but he's reaching, right? So the shot is, it's showing this dresser.
Uh-huh.
And because perspective is confusing me in this movie, the dresser looks like a life-size dresser.
Yeah.
And it looks like they framed the shot of like this life-size dresser. But then Leon reaches his hands to it, and his hands are as big as the dresser. Yeah, and I was exactly. What the hell kind of movie am I watching? Like, this is trippy as shit. It's like a Naked Gun film. And he reaches in, and apparently it's not. It's like this little, like, key box or whatever. It's like a little cubby box. But it's shaped like a dresser, and it looks like a dresser. So their perspective was freaking me out. So he takes a key out and then opens up a gun locker and takes the gun. So the very first scene is, like, this weird kid with this, this like, Japanese headband on, stealing a rifle from these people's houses. And I'm like, I don't know he lives there. I don't know his relation to them. Like, I don't know what the hell's going on. And he like plays with the gun, and then he leaves, and then it cuts to like some other lady. Was that jarring to you? I was like, what the fuck is going on?
I mean,
it cuts to that lady crying.
It didn't jar me per se. Like all this intro did was told me that these kids are coming from a variety of houses where you have mom in the bed crying for that one girl. And she's like, well, I'm going now, Mom. And then it just kind of shows you each one of their relationships. And Leon sneaks into his parents' house while they're sleeping, or parents' room while they're sleeping. And he steals a gun from them.
How did you feel about
Tanya likes not really to yell at her parents?
Which one?
Tanya.
Oh, gosh. That whole scene with Tanya is just, because she wants to go by herself. She doesn't want her brother to come with her. But they want the brother to go to make sure, I guess, she doesn't get molested by these boys.
But
how did you feel about not knowing what they were doing at first?
It didn't bother me, I don't think.
Okay.
I was just confused at, well, I never really was confused. What I was experiencing was, you know, these kids are all going out to do their thing, basically. Mm-hmm. And they hang out all the time, and they're just going on a day trip to this fucking landmark, I guess.
It was weird. It felt like they were all sending the kids away to like a camp or something, but they were all just going on a trip, like a weekend trip to Bridge to Nowhere, which I don't know, might be like a common thing living over there, I guess. But it felt like they were doing more than what they were actually doing. It's almost like some of them were acting like they were sending them off to war.
Sleeping bags, hiking gear, and a lot of booze.
Yeah. I don't know. Something I guess not to dwell on too much. So, okay. So we have Julie, the sister, who's the quintessential 80s. She is 80s personified. We have Tanya, who I just wrote down her personality as to be killed. We have Gray, who is to be killed.
Yes.
And then we have the brother, Carl.
Gray is the kid whose dad, like, is waiting for him outside.
Yes.
And so you can tell he's sheltered, but, like, he goes along with Leon because he likes Leon's personality, which is fucking bananas.
Bonogamous.
Bonogamous. You know, that's a word. Bonogamous.
That's right.
That's
right.
What Leon was.
Bonogamous.
Bonogamous.
So, yeah, Gray is a follower, and I mean, we've all seen this in our lives where you have, like, a bully or a fucking asshole. Even if he's not, like, a physical bully, he's just, like, a dingus. And then you have, like, another person with him.
The more we talk about how broken these relationships are, the more poignant this film gets.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot. This film is very complex and has a lot of shit going on.
It's
with
sad.
All of the characters.
Like, I feel sad for everybody in this film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you ever met somebody who they have a personality when this other person isn't around?
Yeah.
But then when the bad person shows up, they just become them.
Yeah.
So now there's just two annoying people you don't like anymore. But then when you separate them, the other guy is like, oh, I'm normal and fine now. Like, oh, okay, you're a human being. It's, yeah, that's kind of how I felt about those two. I love how Gray breaks down later on in the film and just becomes like a useless pile of shit. After acting like such a tough guy, you know, with Leon or whatever. So then we got Carl, who's like the quiet loner. Who kind of just doesn't want to participate, and he's like, I don't know if he's annoyed that he's
there,
but...
Hold on.
What?
Okay. Let's talk about a scene that involves Carl that, like, I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, all right. All right.
So, Leon, here's how we understand the relationship between the three men on the trip. So, Leon sees Carl by himself. He's like, Carl, come here. We found a skeleton, a human remains. And like, it must have been murdered or something because it has blunt force trauma to the head. And then Carl's like, what the fuck? Are you serious? So he goes with Leon. And then Leon's like, it's right there past that bush. And when Carl goes past the bush, it's Gray's ass that farts in his face.
He pushes his face towards it and he farts right in his face. Probably one of the best pranks I've ever seen.
Because it was so fucking simple and dumb.
It was really good. And then after that, they're like, we don't want you to be here.
Yeah.
We're trying to score with these girls. They had already previously struck out with both of them. And Leon is already frustrated that this 17-year-old girl won't have sex with him. I don't know how old he is, so I don't know. But still, no, not good. And he's like, you know, they look like they're going to beat him up. And then Carl takes out a knife. He's like, get the fuck out. Get away from me. And they're like, oh, okay. And they kind of make a gentleman's agreement of like, stay out of our way and we'll stay out of your way. Which that whole scene was so good.
Yeah.
I loved all of that. But we should talk about the skinny dipping scene.
Oh.
Because this scene leads up to the butt prank is what I call it.
I got ahead of myself.
Yes. So all the kids, they've been driving around in their flaming Jeep. You know, and they finally get to where the bridge is, like the camping portion, and they find this lake, and the two boys are already in the lake completely naked.
Yes.
And they're showing their dongs and everything. This is a dong type of film, all right? This isn't your typical Hollywood movie where they
don't
show dong.
Whenever the females show up, they become all of a sudden ashamed of their dong.
Well, at first, they're okay with it. They're like, hey, come on, jump in. And the girls are, like, taking off their clothes. And then because Carl doesn't take his clothes off, and he's, like, standing there judging all of them and watching them, they all become self-conscious.
I didn't notice it was Carl that
And then that's when the boys cover up, and that's when the boys are so pissed. And then they also get pissed because later on, Leon is mad at Carl because of that, what had happened. And then fucking Carl blows a kiss at Leon. And it was so good. Like a little kissing face at him. Like, hey, fuck you, dude. Yeah.
Wow.
Saying I'm here to fuck you over. Like, don't try to have sex with my sister, you fucking creep. And then that's why he does the fart prank on him.
Oh.
But that shows like a whole weird dynamic. And maybe I was reading this wrong, but it felt like the brother was like, it's so creepy to have your brother see you naked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, brother and, I don't know, the brother and sister thing. That was really creepy.
Well, that, I believe is, I
maybe that's why he was so uncomfortable though.
Maybe, but then again, like there's, you know, that it's a different culture, because East Asian cultures, like brothers and sisters are closer in strange ways than we expect.
Anyways, so. And then when Leon tries to have sex with Tanya, like, right in front of Carl, I'm like, guys, come on. Could you guys, like, how awful that must be for this brother to be there, yeah. like, listen to his sister, like, making out with some dude. Oh, that would be the fucking worst. But, let's see.
To be fair, the sister said she didn't want the brother to come.
Gross, Dan. Disgusting. You're a pervert. Anyways, don't think about that too much. So, another big turning point in the film is the bull. Don't think about that. The bull incident. Ew. Not that kind of bull incident, all right? Get your fucking mind out of the gutter, Dan.
Bull incident.
Professional.
Bull incident.
So,
Blincident.
The scene where all the kids are dicking around, they're like playing around with their camping gear or whatever. And they have a rifle, by the way.
So yes, that's what the kids
call it nowadays in old Kiwi land. One of the bulls that Mac and Lise are the locals there.
Sounds like mac and cheese, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I was like, I don't get it. Mac and cheese. So Mac and cheese are they're herding a bull, and the bull escapes and shows up at the campsite where the kids are. And because Leon is insane, he's like, I'm going to kill that bull and eat it. He starts trying to shoot at it.
Before that, we did have a run-in with Mac and Lise.
Oh, yeah.
So
they've met
They had characters. Been established, and it was established that Leon is with Tanya, but is trying to get into Lisa's pants.
Yes. So, it's confusing. I think you maybe brought this up off-air, on-air, I don't remember, but the relationship between Mac and Lise, I thought they were father-daughter.
Yeah, I thought so too.
But, because of the age difference? But I guess they're in a relationship? In a strange relationship.
Yes, very strange.
It was bizarre. So, long story short, Mac takes the gun from Leon and bashes it on a rock and basically calls him a pussy and an idiot and tells him to get the fuck out of here and humiliates Leon. And this is the breaking point for Leon. Like, he has now lost. He's been emasculated in so many different ways in his mind that he has now lost his fucking brain. And now he's like, all right, nothing is going well for me. Let's just go to the Bridge to Nowhere. And then once they get there, he's just, like, out of control.
Yeah.
He almost throws his friend off the bridge. He tries to rape Tanya. He is excommunicated from the group because he tries to do that. And then he makes his way, this is all in the middle of the night, back to the farmhouse where Mac and Liz live. Liz sees Leon watching her bathe outside, because I guess they have tubs outside. Yeah. That's how they bathe. I don't know. That's just how the farm area people do it. And she is into it because earlier on, she talks about how she has a secret notebook of secrets. And she's like, maybe if I meet someone truly special, I'll show them all my secrets. And I'm like, aren't you two together? So it makes me think their relationship is like Mac has like kidnapped this woman or like is holding her. But also, Lise is also disturbed and crazy.
Yeah, I get that.
Because it is implied that she has done some bad things before that Mac has covered up.
Well, it's implied in the film that while Leon is watching them like try to do it, he gets discovered. And there's like a standoff, and it's implied that she kills Leon.
Yes, yes. That is actually what happened. She had killed him. And she wanted him to watch them have sex. That was her goal. And then her later goal is that she wants to be a teenager and go run away with them.
Yeah.
And then when she's in that mode of like, I'm a teenager, she is out of her mind. She's so crazy. And then Mac is like,
I did like her somehow, scene a lot where she was devolving.
Oh, it's great. And he's like trying to get her back to reality. Like, that's not real. That's not real. And he's like, listen, I know you hate me. That's real. You know, but like everything else you're thinking of, that's not real. And he specifically says to her, like, you know, you killed that kid. It was bad. We're going to fix it. I'm going to make sure that all of these other kids, they'll die too, but it'll make it look like they've died of just getting lost in the woods. And we'll clean up this mess just like before. Like, he implies, like, this has happened before.
Yeah.
Mac isn't killing them because he wants to. He's doing it because he loves this girl.
Yeah.
And she has done this type of terrible stuff before. I love that dynamic of, like, he's not just some evil serial killer who's going to just murder people for no reason. Yeah. He's trying to protect his life because he likes what he has and what he's built. And even though this woman is clearly disturbed and, like, doesn't want to be here anymore, he'll do whatever he can to, like, keep her there and try to keep her happy the way he thinks that she should be happy. And there's so much going on. There's so many layers in that notebook of, like, her secrets and everything. I love how they kept that a mystery, how, like, you know, later on he has a chance to read the notebook and he doesn't do it.
He burns it.
And it was like, oh, it's so good. And I love the actor who plays that villain. Hold on, I'll read his name here. Let's see. Bruno Lawrence. And apparently he had a, I don't know if he had a short career, but he only lived to his 50s.
Oh, shit.
But I guess he's like a cult, like one of those cults of personality actors.
Interesting.
People like him a lot, I guess, in New Zealand. I thought he did a great job. I thought he was such like a menacing, like I could easily see him as a hero.
Me too, but it's speaking on his menacing thing, there's this really fucking intense scene where towards the end where Carl has the gun on him and he shoots him and it works. And then he still has the drain gun or the gun trained on him, and he shoots again with Mac just looking him dead in the eyes, and there's no bullets, and Mac's like, I'm gonna fuck you up now. Like,
that scene was amazing. That the final showdown at the end was really fucking good. It's like the only way the movie could have ended.
Yeah.
I loved it. So is there any other scene you want to talk about before we close? It's funny. We talked about everything but the kids wandering around in the woods.
That's
the second half of the film is like the kids wandering around. Cause like the more interesting thing is like what the villain is doing to them.
Yeah.
Cause he's like sending a dog to watch where they are.
Send the dog to watch where they are. He sets up their fucking boom box to lure them away.
To get them lost in the woods. He was genius.
Like he's so fucking smart. It's great.
And like he knows that they're trying to get to the river so they can leave because they can just follow the river up to leave. So like whenever they get to the river, he shoots them to.
So
to
he's
get
like
them
a
to
perfect hunter, basically.
Yeah. Well, he's hurting them like he does with the bull.
Yeah.
It's completely mirrored to what he does with the animals. He's treating them like animals, just hurting them and hurting them until they are so exhausted that they just collapse and die.
Yeah.
Because they haven't had any food. It is such an interesting idea for a film because in most horror movies, it would just be some asshole in a mask stabbing them one by one when they're like, go to jerk off or whatever they're doing in the woods. And that's why I thought it was so refreshing. Seeing like an updated version of this movie, I think would be cool if they were to like remake it. I don't know. Maybe, hopefully it would be good. They'd probably find some way to fuck it up. But I love all the concepts of this movie and everything else about it. Now we got to talk about one more thing before we end.
Oh, what is that?
That is the scene that kind of makes you question how you care about the heroes. And that is the dog killing scene.
Yeah.
If you were in their situation where a man was hunting you and trying to keep you in the woods to starve you to death, and he had a dog tracking you to know everywhere you were, would you try to kill the dog to get this guy?
I probably would.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Yeah. It was a very tough decision, for sure.
And the scene where they do it is not a fun scene.
No.
It's not played for, like, horror slapstick or whatever. They try to make it as real as possible, and it was rough.
Yeah.
Was there any other scene like that where it kind of made you like question the hero's motives?
Well, like we were saying, just like the diagnosis of fucking Leon, because it's so obviously bipolar disorder.
Yes, yes.
It's just like, oh, these are all very broken people trying to live their life and enjoy it.
Yeah. Enjoy it! Two scenes I thought were a little weird, where, like, I don't know if it was a writing thing or just, like, it didn't make sense for the characters to do it. Maybe because they're delirious and they're, like, tired and they don't know what they're doing because they've been out in the fucking woods for days and days. But when they find that house with the girl in it,
yeah,
with Liz, why didn't they stay in the house? They had food. They could just wait for the killer guy to come. They have a hostage. They have everything. And instead, they take a shotgun and leave. They don't take any food. They even comment on that. They don't take food. And I'm like, you could have just held up in this house and fucking finished this guy off.
That's where mac and cheese live.
But they have the cheese. They just wait for the mac. I don't know. It could have been a good standoff right there. But then the movie a lot of other things would not have happened in the film. Another scene, once they have the shotgun and Gray decides to like go Rambo and he confronts Liz and Mac. And he's like, I'm going to kill you guys. I'm going to kill you guys. Because he catches them off guard, mm-hmm. right? And they're on horses. Gray shoots Liz mm-hmm. and not Mac for some reason.
I didn't get that.
And then he's like, I got one. I got one. And then they all run away. And I'm like, what? Huh? I mean, if you're going to shoot anybody, it's going to be the dude who's been trying to kill you this whole movie. I mean, they don't really know that Liz is dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was strange.
Well, the dynamic of... That was the only thing that didn't make sense to me, was why are they lumping Liz in with Mac? Because I guess that's just something that, you know, is privileged information to the audience, because we kind of get to know Liz a little bit, but they don't. So that makes a little bit of sense.
And I get why they have that scene, because then we can have the whole... Like, now Mac has gone truly insane. Because before, he wasn't going to murder them. But now he's like, oh, I'm going to just try to shoot them all. Like, I don't care if I get caught. I don't, you know, like, I don't care if I make it look like an accident. Like, I'm going to hunt these people. And then he, like, brings her to the house and puts the notebook on her and then lights everything on fire. And then he shoots all of his dogs because he knows he's not going to live.
Yeah.
That was fucked up. He's like, there's going to be no one to take care of the dogs, so I'm going to kill them all. Fuck. So it's like, I get why it's there, because there's some more powerful shit later on, but I just felt like it was a little shoehorned. Like, it would have been better if, like, Liz tried to run off to them. She's like, I want to be one of you guys. And then they, like, jump out and shoot her, thinking it was, like, the other guy. Like, thinking it was Mac.
Yeah.
Like, if they did it on accident, that would have been better. But just the way they did that scene was a little clumsy and kind of unfortunate. But, okay, anyways, so plugs. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, we are at IndieFilmPod. If you'd like to hit us up on Gmail, it is theindiefilmreview@gmail.com. And we are also on Facebook. I believe it's just Indie Film Review. I don't know. Something like that. You can find us. We're also on we're on everything now. We're on Stitcher. We're on Spotify. We're on all the things you love to get podcasts. So anywhere you can get podcasts. I mean, you've already found the show. But like, tell other people about the show. And tell the people how accessible we are now. We're so accessible. And all the kids are talking about it. Okay, go ahead, Dan.
We're on Instagram as well, at Indie Film Review Pod. And as always, we are on the Necropodicon Network. But instead of just sucking their dick like I normally do, I'm going to talk to you very specifically about a show that you might have heard on the commercial before this episode. or after. So, basically, there's this new Necropodicon show. It's a TTRPG, or tabletop role-playing game, that is based around the Cthulhu mythos. So imagine a game where you slowly go insane and you do your best to survive. So, very sci-fi with strong horror themes, and the release date is March 1st, and Jared and I are so excited for it. So
I fucking
excited.
Love Cthulhu podcasts. Yeah, Cthulhu's amazing. I used to run one for... like 6 months, and I stopped doing it because I didn't like being the DM and no one else wanted to be the DM. Like, I want to be a character. I'd rather like play as a character, but I love Call of Cthulhu games and podcasts because you it's like you never know who is going to die. That's kind of like the exciting thing of it. And if the story is good enough, you're invested in the characters, and it's like, oh no, you know, like when they're in danger, you kind of like are all into that. What's the show called? Isn't it Sons of the Fathers?
Oh, Sons of the Fathers. Yeah, Sons of the Fathers is the name of the show. Whoops, I forgot to say that.
You fucking dingus, McWingus. Okay, so yeah, Sons of the Fathers. Check it out. Let other people know about our podcast, please. Word of mouth is very important to us. I think that's everything, right?
Yeah, so are them rates. Rate us 5 stars.
Oh, yeah, give us a 5 stars review on iTunes if people even still use iTunes.
It's Apple Podcasts now, fool.
Apple Podcasts, yeah, Apple Podcasts, whatever the fuck it's called. I don't know. I'm too old for that shit. All right, I love all of you. Thank you very much. Dan, you have the final word.
Phenomenas.
Oh, no.